Fish number 16723, George Lambert, reel 1.
Mr. Lambert, reel 1. What's your date of birth, Mr. Lambert?
26th of July, 1918.
Where were you born?
Chesley Street, in a little street called Elm Street, in Chesley Street. If family reference to, well, I'm the youngest of five. Two sisters, two brothers. My father was a bricklayer mason for a firm called Kit Groves of Chesley Street. He was a general foreman for them. And he worked on various schools, Southmoor, Horden, but that's, I can't remember those days, but that's passed down to me. But eventually had to do build a park at a place called Pelton, a village called Peltonfell, just outside of Chesley Street, where he did all the spade work and everything for it with the, for the company. And then when the whole job was completed, they wanted a park keeper, so he applied for it, so he got it. And we moved from Chesley Street to Pelton Fell when I was something around about 5 years of age.
Did your mother work?
No. My mother came from a little village called Plawsworth, which was on the farming side. And I didn't know a lot about my mother's background until she died when she was 93. But prior to that, she was very ill in Durham. And I had to go through and visit her quite often. And I got to know more about my mother in those days than I did when I was doing, because she used to ask questions and used to say, well, you were there. Oh, don't ask. You know, you couldn't say, well, how the hell could I be there when I wasn't born, you know. But I got to know more about my mother in the later years of her life than I did prior, just by little simple questions that she used to ask on the bed when I was at the bedside with her doing.
Was it a large house you lived in?
No, the terraced house. The terraced house at Chester Street was just a normal terraced house, but the house at Pelton Fell was a detached house, and yeah, it was classed as a very big, you know, in those days. And well, we moved then, I thought I would say it'd be around about 1925 when I moved up there, because I remember being there in 1926 when the main strike was, or the big strike was on.
Did that affect the family in any way?
No, it didn't affect us, in the sense that my father was employed by the local people for to maintain the park and the bowling greens and everything, and doing. And I think the funny side of that was that for me, was all the children used to go to soup kitchens and things like that, but I wasn't allowed to go, so I thought I was badly done to. And they used to get pairs of shoes and boots or something, you know, doing. And of course, I wasn't entitled to them, you know. And just being in the mere age of about 6 and 7, I thought that, well, I was badly done to. I didn't appreciate the fact that in those days,
Were you looked upon as something special because you, obviously, your father was working and you didn't need these things?
In a sense, yes. I'd had two or three friends who fathers worked on the railway and things like that, which were their work, and so therefore we're more or less, I think we're sort of stuck together, you know, doing some in those days. But I can remember quite well one time having to go on the local railway line picking coal, you know. as Evans. And just because everybody else did it, I thought I should do it, you know. It wasn't that we needed it. It was just because somebody else was doing it. And I thought, well, we should get some as well, you know, in those days. But
was your father reasonably well paid, wages?
Well, I wouldn't know that, I'll be quite honest, because I was only around about, as I say, when we moved up there in 26, well, I was only about 6 years old.
But, what was the work that most of the people had that lived around your...
Collieries. The old collieries. And they were privately owned collieries by a chap called Kellett. He had, I think it was two collieries, coke works, and later in life he opened a brickyard out, beside one of the collieries.
Was life hard for you in childhood?
I would say no, not compared to other people, because, as I say, we lived in our own grounds, as I say, is because once the park gates was closed, nobody could get in. I couldn't quote, because I can only quote later on in life. I mean, a miner was only picking up about 30 shillings a week, so I don't know what it was when I was doing. But I mean, when I was 14 and 15, the miner was picking up something like about 30 bob a week, you know. So I kind of quote prior to that.
But when did you start school?
When I moved up from, when we moved from Chesley Street up to Pelton Fell, I had to go to a little junior school just outside the park, and I was there for a little while. And then when I was seven, I was transferred to a school called Rosebury, which is a Rosebury school at Newfield, which is the next village up. And I went right through from seven right through to me 14.
What are your memories of school?
Sorry?
What are your memories of school?
Memories of school was, well, just the doings, but I loved the joinery, you know, the carpentry work on the side of it, doings. And it's followed us through in life, like, with no difference.
Discipline, what was that like in school?
Quite good then, you know, I had to walk to school, well, everybody had to walk to school in those days. I would say close on 2 mile, mile and a half, maybe mile and a half to 2 mile. You walked there, you came home, had your dinner, and you walked back again. Didn't do us any harm.
How did you pass any qualifications, examinations in the school?
No, I just came out as an ordinary, bona fide. When I was 14, I started, my dad, for the first summer, I worked with him in the park. And then there was a job came vacant at the local coke works. And apprentice bricklayer. So I started down there for them. Because purely and simply, I think, because my father was in that particular train, and he said, well, if you want what you want to do, you can do it, you know. And I got the chance to start down there. But it was mostly oven work, you know, what they call fire clear work. It was mostly that.
As an apprentice bricklayer, what were your duties? What jobs did you do?
Well, in those days, I had to learn, you know, the basic, learn the trowel, learn the bonds and what have you, and but at the same time I had to labour to the bricklayer, and if you didn't do what you were doing, you didn't get a clip around there, but you weren't far off, you know, you were doing. But
what was your wage?
Oh, I couldn't.
When you started?
I would think about 8 shillings, if I remember, so I know it wasn't much more in those days. Purely and simply, it was a private company, then, after I'd been there a little while, there was a chap he came called Mr. Walker, who said I was wasting my time and I should get out and get into a bigger company, a proper company, and learn the trade. and which I did do. I moved out. So I think, even though I did me 6 years, nearly 7 years as an apprentice, interrupted by the army, of course, at a later time, but I did fund practically all my apprenticeship doing with the big companies, which was I moved out in one called the Urban Development Company, which was a small, private company. Then I was working for a one called Ernie Jeffcock, Newcastle, which carried me through to when I joined the army.
Had you become involved as a young child, with the Boy Scouts or the Church Lads Brigade, anything like that?
Yeah, I was in the Boy Scouts, which was a doings, but be quite honest, with my father having the park and doings, I spent most of my time playing tennis because I had to help him out occasionally, quite often, after looking after the money on the money side and the bowling green, taking money. So he could have a little time off. I was giving him a handout, taking the money for the bowling green, the tennis courts and the putting green and things like that. And one of the reasons why I'm interested in bowls in the present day.
So you were in the Boy Scouts, but only a short period of time.
Yes, but I didn't follow it through like, doing just a...
What other leisure activities a young boy growing up in the 1920s have?
Well, not far from where I lived was what they call the cricket field, and I got very friendly with a chap called Mr. Reed, who was a powder hole runner, and I used to train running with him around the field, and I got involved with Rosasia. I was running, playing tennis, and that was more my life than anything. I didn't play football as much as anybody else, but I like to play tennis, and as I say, right from the age of 14, I've played bowls.
Did the church or chapel figure in your life at all?
Yeah, well, I used to go to the C of H church over at a little place called West Pelton, and somebody nominated me for the choir, but that didn't last long.
Did your family go to church, chapel?
No, not a lot, no. I'll be quite honest about that. We're all true to doing, but wasn't followed through like a lot of the in those days.
Had you a background of being taught discipline?
My father was a very strong discipline. And one word from him, that was it. I suppose, when you think back, with him being a general foreman on the building trade in those days, it just come automatic to what he said was law.
Coming up to the mid-late 1930s, when you've been towards your later teens, were there signs that war was coming? Did you yourself?
Well, when I was working down the Gill, which is the coke works, there was work being carried out. There's a building of a new coke plant, and it was being built out by a German company. And my father was very friendly with the manager of the coke works at that time. And of course, they used to have a drink together, I couldn't say what year it was, but I would think something like 1937. The Germans were just called away and went back. Off they went, and somebody else had to finish the job off, I'm sure, I can remember my dad coming in and saying that his German people had been called away, they had been called back to Germany. Of course, they were building it, but they were building the job, but it was done by local people, but they were called away. doing that, well, I think that would be roughly, I would think, 37.
Had your father been in the First World War?
No. No, I'm the only one. Neither of my two brothers were. My oldest brother was reserved, I don't know for what reason, mind, be quite honest, because he was away down in Yorkshire, but he was in the special police and whatnot, but I couldn't. And he was a head gardener for carpet manufacturing people down in. And he was based in Puckland and then. My other brother was reserved because he was doing, working on the court works with essential stuff for Dunes, and he was reserved. Dunes. I was the only one. My older sister went down to Rugby to work in munitions. My younger sister, well, she was never involved.
When did you personally become aware that there were problems with Germany? A war might come?
I couldn't say that one because politics didn't interest me then. I was working, helping my dad, playing tennis and just basically doing it. I don't think it really hit me until such time as I was called up in the militia, you know, because I was, at that particular time, I was travelling from Chesley Street to Gateshead when I was called up. And you had to be at work in those days. If your job started at 8 o'clock, you were paid from 8 o'clock. If you were 2 minutes late or 3 minutes late, you were started from 8:15. You lost a quarter of an hour. Consequently, if you were a few minutes late, well, you made sure you didn't start working until 8:15. I always made myself be there for 8 o'clock. So you know, doing this, my work came first. It had to.
What date was this when you joined what you call the First Militia?
I was actually called up on the 15th of the 7th of 1939. And
did you expect to be called up?
Well, it said in the deals there that all eligible people up to the age of 21, you know, well, you had to be 21 to be called up at that particular time. And my birthday was on the 26th, and I was doing, so I knew I expected that there was going to be, you know, and kept my fingers crossed and thought I wouldn't be involved until I got out of my time, you know. But I wasn't, I was called up.
So you're concerned really finishing your apprenticeship before
around
the fact that you had to go into the army?
Well, I think at that particular time, Father Dunn's, my salary was £3.13 a week, which was more than what a miner was getting, and I was getting a bit extra. Because I was setting out and doing different things on the houses and that we were building and that, so that it was important to me that one little item before that people mightn't realise in those days is if you served your time with a company for your 6.5 years, you usually got finished. And you went to work for another company. And if you could work for that company for 6 months, it was doing this, the company you worked for would take you back, knowing that you could go out into the big world and manage without on your own, you know, doing so that you had your self-confidence. And, of course, I missed out, called up. I didn't have to do that. Doing. But that was a little known thing in them days. If you wanted to get on and doing, you had to, if they finished, you had to go into the company and get stuck in and prove that you could do your job. And then basically the other company would take you back on again. It didn't happen to all people, but it did. That was one of the things that did happen in those days.
What were your feelings about joining the army, about having to join the army? Did you want to go?
Yeah, well, no, not really. I'll be quite honest on that. I was quite happy, you know. As I say, I was maybe a little bit more fortunate than some people, as I say, some having to work down the pit and do different jobs. But I was doing the work that I was enjoying doing, and I probably thought they were taking a bit of my life away from me. I know it was only 6 months. Mum and they used to say, "Well, it's only for 6 months. It's probably a holiday for you, you know, Dunes." But you just had that little resentment. But
as it was breaking your apprenticeship.
Yeah, mainly.
And what did the company say they would take you back after your 6 months?
Well, I don't know what you say, because that didn't, with being in the army for 6.5 years, that didn't imply again, you see.
But they hadn't said at the beginning, no, with the fact that war hadn't come yet, that, yeah, well, you've got to do your 6 months and we'll take you.
No. Jumping on to the end of the war, before that particular incident, was if you were a tradesman, you could come out on ear release, but you had to go back to the company that you worked for. But you only got paid for 3 weeks. Yes, 3 weeks, I think it was. You had to start work within 3 weeks for the company that you worked for. If you came out on B release, because they're doing this, you had 3 months holiday, or you were paid for 3 months by the army, and you could please yourself doing it. Well, they wanted you to work, but you didn't. You weren't compelled. And my mother and them didn't realise, but I went for the latter. I thought, well, I've been there for 6.5 years, I might as well have a little bit more out of them, and pick where I want to go. And that's what I did, though, when I came back.
And you had to, in effect, complete the last spell of time of your apprenticeship?
No, what happened was that in Chesley Street, the local council, which I'd never worked for, Mr. Curry, who was the chief general for them, general foreman for them, or were doing. And he stopped me in the street and asked me what I was doing. And I said, well, I don't know. I've got to make my mind up what I'm going to do. So he said, well, will you go down and see Mr. Ridley? That was the clerk of the council at the time. And tell him I've sent you down. And it might have helped, I don't know. But when I got demobbed, they couldn't give me a suit. And I got everything else, but they gave me a chitty, and I had to go to the local tailors in Chesley Street and get measured for one. And of course, when I went down to see Mr. Ridley, I still had my uniform and all my regalia and everything on, you know, because I hadn't anything to wear. And doing, and I think probably that might have helped. And had a long talk with him, and he just said, right, start when you want, anytime you want, just come and see us and just tell us you're going to start for us. And that was the changeover.
How were you informed that you were in the militia? What happened? What was the process of actually joining the militia?
It all came through the post, you know, Jones, from the government, and you know, you had been doing. And I had to be at Fenham Barracks for, I think it was 10:30 on the morning. And of course, I was court and heavy at the time, and I thought, well, when I left home, I'll go and see Ida before I go. And of course, I didn't get there till about 12 o'clock, and I wasn't very, I think I was supposed to be under the last one in, and the sergeant sitting there didn't appreciate it.
What were the initial things they did with you when you walked through those gates? Can you take me through the very early stage, that day even?
You know, where am I going, what am I doing, you know? And I think that when you got through there and you eventually got in the group among the other lads, you know, and you just had to try and pick friends out, you know, doing, which wasn't a lot. But you were kitted out, and we went into the barracks, into the bedrooms. I go, barracks, says, what are you doing? And you give them a bed and your blankets and your bits and pieces.
What kit did they initially give you?
Well, you got all your kit for your bed and everything, and then you got like a khaki jacket and doings for the training, but the actual uniform that you had was grey trousers, white shirt, navy blue blazer, and a red shirt, a red tie, white shirt, red tie, and a beret, and of course your shoes, doings, and that was your uniform, your walking out uniform. But you just had khaki drill for to do all your drills with inside.
Which regiment was it that you were joining?
Well, we weren't in any regiment. There was just 120 of us all called up. And I think I wouldn't know whether we'd have been appointed to a regiment or whether if the war hadn't broken and we'd done doings, or whether... whether we would have been nominated for anything or not, I don't think so. I think we would probably have had to wait, and if there had been later on, it would have been on your ability or what you were doing, I think. I don't know. I couldn't say on that one.
Just like a general service, basic training.
Just a general, I think the object was, you know, discipline and how to fire a rifle, you know, because it's 6 months, it's... Doing.
Had you had a medical before you went in?
Yes. I had to go and have a medical, yes. I think the doctor got the King's Shilling, I think, if I remember rightly. Actually, the salary that we got in those days was 7 shillings. I got a shilling for joining the army, and then the basic wage was seven shillings a week for the doing. And I had to fill in a will, as they say, and there's a testament to say that my mother had to have half of it. So I was on 3 and 6 a week, which was a big difference from in those days, from coming down from £3 odd down to 3 and 6.
Was there a lot of disgruntled people?
Yes,
in Malaysia?
I remember one little incident which was doing. There was a little lad called McGill came in from Sunderland, and beautiful hair. Beautiful curly hair, and of course, the first thing you did on the next morning was to go into the barber's. And when he came out, he just stood there and cried. To just cut all his locks off. And he wouldn't go out for about 3 weeks, I think, about important. But I know it's a hell of quite a while. He wouldn't go out the barracks, he wouldn't walk out the gate. These are just little incidents.
How did you and the group take to discipline, this kind of discipline?
Well, I think the best way I can describe that one is that on the first Saturday morning, after being in a week, and you were going to get a weekend pass, which was everybody's, and on the Saturday morning, we went on the parade ground, which was tarmac. You did your just principles and shorts, and you had to do with the PTI, and you had to do your press ups. If you'd done the press ups and you stood up, if you had no little stones on the chest, you hadn't done it properly. You were made to do one or two more. When you all stood up and doing this, the first one that did that, which was rub his hand down his chest for to knock the stones off, his weekend pass was cancelled. To me, that was the simplest thing in discipline, because you wanted to go and see your girlfriend, you wanted to go and see your mother, and you did something stupid did a little lot like that, and your weekend pass was cancelled. And that was the first instigation for me of discipline.
How did you feel? Did you think it was stupid?
Well, yes, in a sense, because, you know, that you would think that they would say, well, you know, he wants to go, you know, on the Holy Weekend. But yeah, it was my first instigation of discipline, in a sense. I mean, in those days, a sergeant would use language and whatnot, which we weren't used to, which I wasn't used to, but that just went snow for Dyke's back, as the saying is, you know.